readings, I was reminded when I was a little kid one time, I came home from school and I asked my mom, I said, there was a kid at school that said they were going to beat the tar out of me. What does that mean? And my mom said, use your imagination. And then you conjure up all kinds of things of what that might mean. You know, we are a faith that celebrates imagination. You have to use your imagination. And we've been doing it forever. When I start thinking about imagination and faith, I got the privilege yesterday of going up into your mountains. What a better place to, you know, just contemplate and think and use your imagination. And I got to hike with Kelly and Tara and Caroline. Posey was going to go, but she has like 45 grandchildren and she couldn't make it. I think you have a 2.5-week-old grandbaby. That is the best. I'm so jealous. And I said, what does it mean to y'all, imagination? And Tara said she thought of Van Gogh and how he could come into a place and see the browns and turn it into blues and purples in his mind. And Kelly was talking about, for her, imagination meant being quiet and getting back with her thoughts and what she felt in this world. And if you didn't do that, you were starving. And Caroline talked about her grandkids, and she said, when I think of imagination, I think of children who create whole worlds. And what do you think of when you think of imagination? So this first reading, Amos, he's the king of imagination. This is the 7th century BCE shepherd up in the hills. So he was up there, like yesterday when we were hiking, it's just wet rocks. There's trickles of water everywhere. And then it seeps through the limestone and the schist till it comes down into a creek where finally it meets with other waters and comes to a river. And so he was up in those mountains as a shepherd imagining this justice flowing like a river. And so in this 8th chapter, when God says, what do you see? And he says, a basket of fruit, a summer basket of fruit. He's like, no, what do you see? Use your imagination. It's a sign about how we've stuffed ourselves and what this means for justice and the poor. You have to see it. And then you get that beautiful reading from Colossians about the imagination of seeing God in Christ. Through the breaking of bread, through this fellowship that we do, we imagine a church just by breaking bread. So then we get to this gospel. And now we got to remember a couple things about this gospel. First of all, we'll just say a little bit it bugs me in Luke's gospel that they leave out the fact that there's 12 dudes, disciples, sitting around. And why is it falling on just the women to do the work is one question that you might contemplate. But that's not really what I'm preaching about. But I'm just saying, disciples could do dishes. That's all I'm saying. But let's just, the women. But also that we worship and follow the path of love of Jesus, that is a faith of aprons, not capes. Jesus was a servant. You know, the very first bread he broke with his disciples, the Last Supper, he gets up and ties an apron around him and serves. And when the occupied nation, the Romans, came in to make fun of him before the crucifixion, they put a cape on him. So we follow this servant, Lord. So he's not dissing Martha. He's saying, it's important to stop and listen and imagine something. Imagine this world in a better space. Last night when Will and James and Marcus were singing and we were under that starlit canopy with that background that was so beautiful and a double rainbow, didn't it feel like it was all imagined? Like it was wholly imagined. You could imagine communities coming together and supporting these children and loving each other and laughing and celebrating and somehow seeing that is the depth and love of God lived before us. This is my fourth year here, and I'm telling you, it's one of our favorite times to be up here and to just breathe in this air and imagine. But when I first came, it was right after the Russians had invaded Ukraine. And by the next summer, we had started a project, just so everybody knows. Let me just do this, so everybody knows. So Thistle Farms is works with women who are survivors of trafficking, addiction. Started in Nashville, Tennessee 30 years ago. We started with housing. We moved into economic development because it was so important for safety for women. Then we started sister communities. We are now the largest network of beds for women survivors in the United States of America with about 75 operating communities. Largest justice enterprise run by survivors in the country. We have global partners. We started working with women who are refugees because, you know, refugees and human trafficking are all tied together. So when Russia invaded and all the women left eastern Ukraine to come to Kyiv, we started a project called Love Rises and started knitting blankets. And we came the next year and I talked about Ukraine, and Posey, you and many of your friends ordered all the blankets. It was beautiful, it was a wonderful gift. And then, you know, I was like, I can't talk about Ukraine anymore. I've done this, right, over and over. This is 3 years. 3 years. And by this time, the community there, Love Rises, has grown. The woman who runs it, Marina, she's received a medal from Zelensky for her efforts in home front work. She's done education for kids. They take all the money from the blankets and they build out education boxes for children. L'Oreal has now picked up on the blankets and the products. They make these beautiful crochet baskets now. I mean, they're doing incredible work. But she emailed me on July 4th. And July 4th was one of the worst bombings in Ukraine, in Kyiv. She said, I'm so tired. I was too tired to go down to the bunker anymore. I just stayed in the hallway. Can you imagine? It's just like, I can't hardly imagine anything else in so long. And she wrote me the next day and she said, you know, you've never left us. You've kept coming. You've kept going with us, and it keeps me going. And it reminds me of the quote from Martin Luther King, the arc of justice is long, but it bends towards freedom. And I said, do you know, actually, that quote is much, much older than that. It comes from Theodore Parker, who was an abolitionist preacher. And 100 years before that, he preached about, I'm going to get this right, I'm going to get the quote right. That's just a bunch of cash somebody gave me for some baskets I had. Well, I'll just give you the gist of the quote. But the gist of the quote is that with my vision, I can't see the long arc. I can't make out the whole figure. I just have my eyes. I'm simple. But we have to believe it bends. He said that 100 years before King, that he could imagine it. And then King picked up on that imagination, and the imagination continued. That we have these beautiful ways in this world, from Amos, through the early church, through the disciples and Martha and Mary, through musicians singing, through Marina who keeps going, that we have to use our imagination. What do you see? When you look at that altar, I see flowers, but what else do you see? God, I see the hope of a more loving world that I desire more than anything. I see freedom for us to think and believe what's in our deepest hearts, not contained by anybody. I see this hope that you and I continue to hold and have in this world. This is a faith of imagination. It is the biggest gift.